It's a Friday, so we talk it over with Ben Fredrickson. We call it Ben Fred Fridays on Scoops with Danny Mac, presented by Blue Tail Medical Group. Before you have surgery, make sure you contact and get consultation from the folks at Blue Tail Medical Group. Great alternative to surgery. Doctors all over the world coming to Chesterfield to visit with those doctors and saying, how you doing this? How are you keeping people in the game? You can do that as well. BlueTailMedicalGroup.com. Hey, Ben, good morning. How are things going?
Good morning, Dan. I'm doing well. Happy to be with you. And happy Friday, everybody. We made it.
Happy Friday. Another week is in the books. The Cardinals open up a 7-game homestand. We'll start with baseball here and probably do a lot of baseball here. The road trip wasn't great. Couple of wins. Cardinals have had now 5 series in which they've had a rubber game. They have not won any of those. They're 2 games below 500 with the Reds in town. So how would you size up the first handful of days and weeks of this Major League season for the Cardinals?
Well, frustrating for them, right? I mean, they were clearly searching for some things, and it seems like when they found some other things gave way. They had games where there was big offense, which is a really good sign. I mean, they're doing some things. They're having some big offensive outbreaks that suggest they might have a more powerful offense than we've seen in years past, and then there's no consistency. So they find some offensive traction, then they can't get the starting pitching. They get the starting pitching, the offense does its job, and then a rare bad game for the bullpen. The defense has come and gone at times. They just haven't had a stretch of games where they've been able to fire on all cylinders, and I think they're probably frustrated by that. That's a lot of teams in the National League right now. There's only a handful of teams that I think are happy with the way they're playing in the NL. You know, the team that the Cardinals are playing in this to start this homestand, the Reds, are kind of feeling the same way, I think. They felt like they were going to go win the World Series after beating the Cardinals in that first series, and they're cruising into town right around 500, a little bit below. So both of these teams kind of need to find some traction, and it's not a bad time to play each other because it could fire up both teams. So the Cardinals, I think the good news is you're getting some traction in your rotation.
Yep.
They're not going to go anywhere if they don't have quality starts. And we're seeing that from these guys now. And I was really impressed with Carlos Martinez his last time out. So that's a plus. The bullpen's been good. They've got to figure out some way to get some consistency in their offense now and then have everything come on at once. And easier said than done so far for these guys.
Tyler O'Neill will be back tonight. KK will be the starter for St. Louis. Sonny Gray, I believe, is going for the Reds here in game number 1 tonight. So looking forward to that. Obviously, a lot of people are looking at Matt Carpenter, and I think one of the things you have to look at is with O'Neill back, Williams has shown signs. Carlson's going to play every day. That means Edmund goes to second, and I would anticipate probably Carpenter more time on the bench now as what we've seen the last couple of weeks.
I would think so. I mean, we're going to see which way the Cardinals have to lean, and they're going to have to pick one way. Either it's continue the outfield experiment and really stay true to figuring out what you have and don't have out there, or lean toward, you know, trying to continue to find ways to kind of launch Matt Carpenter. And, you know, what a strange start to the season it's been for him, where if you covered up the results and looked at some of the exit velocities and the barrel rate, things would look really good. But then you factor in the strikeouts and it's, you know, they're at a career high clip, and the fact that the shifts are just killing him. I mean, I don't think he's had one at bat this season, correct me if I'm wrong, where he hasn't faced a pretty severe defensive shift, and they're doing it for a reason. It's up to 100% now. And, you know, they know where he's going to put it, and he can't hit it over him out of the park, 'cause he's got like a handful of balls that have died at the warning track. And he can't figure out how to go the other way with it consistently enough for them to stop shifting. It's a tough spot. So I think they have to go back to their original plan, which was find kind of ways to try to bring him off the bench and put Edmund back there at second base, which should help your infield defense. And you got to kind of keep cycling through these outfielders. And I'm with you, man. Even when Bader gets back, I don't exactly want to see Justin Williams just planted on the bench. I think he has taken advantage of this opportunity. I think we're seeing them being willing to give him more of a chance to be a regular everyday guy. You know, starting him against both you know, righties and lefties is a sign of that. And they might have something going with him over his last 10 or so games. He's looked more comfortable. He's looked more confident. He's going to make some mistakes. He's green. He's going to have some moments like where he doesn't know that the strike that he just watched was the third. I don't think those can happen anymore.
No.
But we've seen some flashes of a guy who can make some loud contact, and some of those balls are starting to drop in. So they're going to have to decide one way or the other. Are they going to – is this season more about trying to get something out of Matt Carpenter and trying to get him back, or is it about sorting through these outfielders? Pretty soon they're not going to be able to have it both ways there.
You had an interesting piece where you really looked at the numbers of Carpenter. What did you come away with?
Well, I think there is some encouraging signs that we talked about: the exit velocity, the barrel rate, the expected slugging percentage. And I don't scoff at those numbers, but you can't ignore the trend line you go back to the start of the 2019 season, where as many guys who have had as many opportunities as he has, he's toward the bottom of the list in pretty much every meaningful results produced statistic. You can't ignore that either. We're talking about more than 700 plate appearances. That's not a small number. That's Tommy Edman's career and then some in terms of evidence. I also see some concerning things in the numbers that he's got going this season. We mentioned the strikeout rate. It's way up for him. He's swinging at more pitches outside of the zone. He's making contact on a smaller percentage of pitches that are inside the zone. And his contact rate is down in general, which I think what we're seeing him do, and I actually think it's the right approach, he's just not getting the results. He's got to hit home runs, Dan.
Yeah.
He's not going to be a guy who sprays the ball all over the field. He would do it by now if he could do that. We would see him doing that regularly to beat these shifts. He's not going to be a guy who hits a bunch of doubles anymore. He doesn't have the speed to do that if he could do it. And I'm not trying to beat the guy up. He's got to hit home runs. When he was great in 2018, what did he do? He hit a ton of home runs. He had a career-high home run total, a career-high slugging percentage, and a career-high strikeout number. He just hit home runs and tried to launch the ball, and he's doing that now. Some of those balls are just down at the warning track. It's a question of, does he have the power to get him over the fence? One thing I think you got to keep in mind, and people might call me a homer here, and that's fine. I just tried to present the numbers as I saw them. Some of those balls might go out when the weather warms up a little bit. We all know the ball flies a little bit more as the weather gets warmer. We're still kind of trying to figure out what this new ball does. But some of those balls that have been caught, and you've called all of them that have been hit to the warning track and caught on the run, there have been at least three of them, probably more like five. Some of those might get out when the weather's a little bit warmer. And then if those get out, we're probably not talking about Matt Carpenter being one of the least effective hitters in baseball right now.
You know, you can talk about Arenado and Goldschmidt, and rightfully so. They're great players. But how about the start of Tommy Edman and how valuable he has been to this team because of his flexibility? It's really bought the Cardinals some time with some of these injuries. Allows you to play Carpenter if you want.
Yeah, we have we've talked a lot over the years and on these podcasts before about having a reliable player, a reliable hitter at leadoff, and he's done that. And that's not an easy task to jump in there. And he's done it no matter what position he's playing. He's made outstanding defensive plays at second base, in the outfield. He's, stirring the discussion of a positional utility man gold glove idea, which I think is a great idea personally. But, I mean, he's been calm, cool, steady, and he's just a good player, to use a cliche. I mean, he does everything. He's aggressive. He's got sneaky power. He's fast. He's got a glove. And I like his mentality where he's one of the few guys who it doesn't seem to bother them at the plate where they're playing in the field. For a young guy without a ton of experience in the majors, he just seems to kind of have an old soul about him. And I think it's really benefited him well because he doesn't get flustered. He doesn't get worked up. He's just pretty much sticking with his approach. And I think on the analytical side, he's cut down on some of the pitches that he used to be swinging at that weren't good pitches to hit. You don't want him to try to work a bunch of walks. We used to talk about that with him where he's not walking enough. Well, you don't want Tommy Edman trying to work walks. You want him hitting, but you want him hitting pitches that are strikes because there's a better chance he'll square them up. And I think he's doing a better job of that this year.
When you look at the lineup, it's always dissected in our city every single day when that thing comes out. I do wonder if they're going to move Goldie and Arenado down, put a Dylan Carlson maybe two, or put him at four and keep those two big guns at two and three. I think it's interesting to see what may happen with this lineup as we move forward.
I've always liked the idea of Carlson at two. You could go, switch hitter, Edman, Carlson, those two guys, both switch hitters with speed that can use the use their speed on the bases, and then you get a little more RBI chance for Goldschmidt and Arenado. The risk there, of course, is that you lose the effect of having a guarantee of those two guys in the first inning. And Schiltas talked about how he really likes that kind of punch in the face of having those guys have to face the starter in the first inning no matter what. But, you know, you really, if you get to the point where you can reliably count on either Edmund or Carlson to get on, then, you know, then you can do that in the first inning and then maybe have a little more RBI potential. I didn't mind Yadier Molina hitting there, but it's probably unrealistic to see Yadi continue to do this. And now, as you pointed out quickly over this road trip, he just took a ball off the hand. So, you know, he's a tough guy and he'll never complain, but you do wonder a little bit how that's going to affect his swing, at least in the near future, because it looks like he's still kind of sore.
Beginning today, 17 in a row. This is a fairly important stretch of games, and I know it's really early. We're about 10% through the schedule, and I usually look at Memorial Day as being my time of kind of taking a look and saying, okay, here's some league-wide trends. Here's what your team needs, maybe doesn't need, those kind of things. But I think we're going to find out something about the Cardinals in these 17 games because Oviedo's going to get a run. You're going to get O'Neill back, and maybe you get a better idea of where you're at.
Yeah, and you should have a much better timeline in the near future of both Bader and Michaelis, right? You know, so you should have a better feel for who's coming and maybe what they're going to be able to provide. So I'm with you, and it does feel like, and I'm guilty of this as anyone, it feels like there's such a rush to make big conclusions about teams right now. I think because we're not quite adjusted back to the 162 yet. You know, last year our big thing was we took the games and we kind of did dog years translation where we figured out what percentage of games this was like with the 162. And I feel like we almost haven't adjusted back where people are trying to make conclusions on teams based off of 15 games or so. And that's really not, those aren't usually good conclusions. So I'm with you, but this gauntlet stretch is going to be telling because if they don't get good starting pitching, it's going to be very obvious they need to add something there. If Michaelis is not going to be back at some point in the very near future. And I think, too, it should be a better read on the offense. It's been, at times, I've been encouraged by some of the power we've seen from it. We didn't see a lot of games where they put up 10-plus runs last year. They're actually doing it, at least so far, in like 10% more games than they did last year. So there's some encouraging signs there. It's how do they get it more often, and how do they, maybe they don't need to get 11 one night, they need to get, you know, to get 5 two nights in a row. How do they kind of get to some of that consistency? I think we should maybe see a little bit more of that as the outfield gets healthier and starts to sort itself out a little bit. And they got to get the part of the big thing is they got to get Goldie going and they got to get Paul DeJong going. And if those guys fire up, then they can weather some turbulence in the outfield, which they planned for.
Chris Rabe here for the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. I'm very proud that Ophthalmology Associates are the studio sponsor of the Chris Rabe Show, and I'm very proud that they are a part of our Scoops with Danny Mac family. If you haven't gotten your eyes checked in a while, what are you waiting for? Whether or not you're having issues right now, your eyes are one of your most important investments, and that's why you should invest in going to see the doctors at Ophthalmology Associates. Schedule your annual eye exam. Insurance more than likely covers it, and you could not even realize that you're getting out in front of some issues that could potentially come down the road. If you've thought about LASIK, but maybe you've only heard some of the misconceptions about it, maybe you don't know what to believe, go ask the best. Ask the doctors. They're called the doctors because more doctors trust them than anyone else. So go see Dr. Greg Birdy, Dr. Ranjan Malhotra, Dr. Robert Prasadi, and Dr. Andrew Royer. Go see the doctors. Tell them Chris Rabe and Scoops with Danny Mac sent you. Visit youridoc.com or call 314-966-5000. That's youridoc.com or 314-966-5000.
It's an important game tonight, too. You're inside your division. And at least from what I've seen, it's going to be Reds, Milwaukee, St. Louis, any combination. But, man, that Brewers pitching is awfully good. And I think Reds could be dangerous.
Well, yeah, the Brewers are doing this, and Christian Yelich isn't even doing well. So, you know, this idea that they're legitimate is proving to be true. The Reds, you know, the Reds look tough as heck there to start. They've kind of bottomed out a little bit for now, but they're kind of like the Cardinals. They've been boom or bust, and I think they're searching. I love the idea of the Reds and Cardinals getting some bad blood back. And I don't want to see anybody get hit with pitches. It's not what I'm talking about, but I like that there's an edge to this rivalry again. And man, the way that folks in Cincinnati responded to Nick Castellanos flexing over Jake Woodford, you would have thought it was like, I mean, it's like their version of the Pat Maroon game 7 goal for the Blues. Like, it's being like they're going to build a statue of it. I think they got t-shirts. Castellanos just said the other day, Dan, that a waiter stopped him in a restaurant and told him that he had it on the background of his phone. I mean, they're treating it as if it was like this monumental moment, which, not to knock our good friends in Cincinnati, that kind of speaks to maybe the lack of big moments they've had here in the recent years. But I'll say this, I'm okay with the Cardinals and the Reds having a little bad blood. I think that makes things more fun, and I think it makes things a little spicier, which, if we're talking baseball in April, we need a little more spice.
Yeah, I'm with you. We just saw Mizzou wrap up. I think it was Randy Carricker put out that Scott Linehan is now an advisor offensively for head coach Eli Drinkwitz. Is that accurate? Have you seen that?
He's been around. I'm not sure quite the exact title, but if Randy had said that, then I don't have any reason to doubt it.
I could be wrong, but my point is
he's done a good job of having guys around, different folks who have something to bring, who want to come observe, or maybe in a little bit more of an official role. He's kind of been an open invitation guy, at least has been my impression, for coaches, players, folks with ties to the program. He wants them around.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think they're going to have a good year. And I know it's, you know, April and we're talking about this, but a lot of people always say, Dan, make sure you ask Ben about Illinois. So I'm going to ask you about Illinois. What have you heard about Brett Bielema and what he's doing in terms of just, you know, first couple of months on the job, trying to get some recruiting routes going, that kind of thing with their football program?
Positive things. And I think he started with that early. There, unfortunately, had been kind of a decaying of the relationship, I guess is the best way to put it, between Lovey and his staff and kind of the high school coaches around the area. And I think Bielema has done a good job from day one of trying to build those bridges back up and, you know, reopen those doors. And, you know, Illinois, similar to Missouri, like, if you're not getting good players from your backyard, then you're going to have a hard time getting good players. If you're not appealing to the kids who grew up watching you and whose parents went there, then you're going to have a hard time appealing to kids who has never heard of Illinois or Missouri football before. So he's gregarious, man. He knows what works. He knows what he wants to do. He's not going to walk into a living room or, you know, a high school coaching banquet and not make an impression. And I think that his enthusiasm and his likability in a one-on-one setting is going to help mend any bridges that were burned. So I think that starts right away. It won't be instant, but, you know, you're talking about a guy who has a lot of experience, A, in playing some smash mouth football, B, has kind of a reputation for being a lineman whisperer, to get the big boys to play up front. He kind of makes them the rock stars of the team, which is a good idea if you're trying to play Big Ten football, of having good lines on both sides, and C, he's got some connections now and some experience that I think will make him be better than what we saw. I thought he got a raw deal at Arkansas. I really did. I think they had some unrealistic expectations. And I think when you look at what he did at Arkansas from an independent and non-Arkansas related view, you think, I don't know why it didn't get more of a shot there. Why it didn't work out a little bit better. So I like the hire a lot. I think he's a good coach, and I think he's going to have success. I just don't know how quickly he'll be able to get it going, but we're about to find out.
Yeah, we are. And not much time left in the NHL season. You covered the Blues last night at Enterprise Center. I don't want to talk about the game. I just want to look at what the Blues have in front of them. It's 13 maybe games, something like that, 14 games left. In your opinion, does this team make the playoffs with the way the schedule is set up and who they have to play the rest of the way?
I want to believe in them, Dan. I'm a sucker for Berube. I was so impressed with the way that he has lifted this team up since he's been here, and I don't want to believe that the Berube magic has worn off. So I'm going to put some confidence in them, but it's not going to be Berube who's getting them there. I mean, we've got to see some guys who are the leaders of this team step up. I mean, Jordan Binnington, he said they're coming back. He will if he starts playing as well as he can. I think it's time to turn up the heat a little bit on a Vladimir Tarasenko, who, you know, he wants to be a leader of this team. He got upset he wasn't the captain. Well, play like it. Play like you're the captain. Prove it on the ice. You know, some of these new guys, Torrey Krug can play better. They're not all the way healthy, but they're healthy enough that they should be able to win enough games against teams that are either not playing for the playoffs or teams that are already in. They should be the most motivated team on the ice every night, unless they're playing Arizona, and they should be a better team than Arizona. So I'm going to say yes, and I'll be disappointed if I'm wrong.
All right, my man, we'll catch you up next Friday. It'll be the end of a homestand as Bryce Harper and the Phillies will be here. And then tonight, the Reds kick off a 3-game weekend series at Busch Stadium. Always fun. And these are fun too, Ben, and we'll talk next Friday.
Yeah, the Cardinals should have Bryce Harper, by the way.
Yeah.
But maybe they can get Scherzer at the trade deadline to make up for it.
So I was doing some numbers because, you know, I love Max Scherzer. I want to watch him pitch anytime. I don't care what uniform he's wearing. I prefer,
right.
Preferably St. Louis.
The Cardinals don't want to face him anymore after getting crushed by him at spring training and then having it roll right into the season. I'll tell you that much.
You know what, though? He hasn't had like the jump off the page numbers against the Cardinals. I thought 2 days ago the game was won in that first inning with the bases loaded, back-to-back strikeouts with one out. Then he settled in. It whatever team gets him at the trade deadline, if indeed he is traded, they take on about $12 million in salary and they get for the year, and they get one of the best pitchers in the history of the game. So it's the roll the dice, if you will, if you get a Max Scherzer.
I'd like to see him in, underneath the arch growling and hollering at himself. Have a little competition with Wainwright to see you can have the best postseason performance. I could get on board with that.
Absolutely. Hey, let's catch you up next Friday. Thanks, my man.
Sounds good, brother. Talk soon.